All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Behind the Wheel podcast. I'm Scott. Luis, you've seen us before.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're here. So let's get into it. Right into it.
Right into
right
it.
Right. We're going right in.
Okay.
Going right in. There's somebody jackhammering out the window.
Of course.
Slightly disturbing. But you know,
I
guess.
That's our luck. As soon as we started talking, all we heard was.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thanks, guy.
So anyhow, with that said, so today's an interesting one in the sense that, one, we're going to let you know that we are hiring and we have some positions open. So we're kind of letting you guys in on the first part of this. We'll tell you what those positions are, so stay tuned to that. But we'll also be talking about kind of some of the questions that we get a lot where people are interested to find how do they work in automotive, right?
Yeah.
So, this happens a lot. People have certain skill sets. They may be working for, a different type of industry or company, but their passion is cars. Their mm-hmm. passion is automotive. Mm-hmm. And they want to know how do they break into the automotive industry to kind of work on this side of the fence. So we'll talk a little bit about that and maybe share some of the experiences that, we each have had. We obviously come from two separate backgrounds.
Yes, we do.
And I think, we'll kind of touch on that. So first, let's get to the positions. I want to tell you about, we have three positions open. That's right, three. And listen, if you are out there and you know anybody that would be a fit for these positions, or if you know anybody out there that would know somebody that might be a fit for these positions, feel free to share, feel free to let us know. And we are working on getting those up on our website as we speak. We've put a couple job postings up on some different things, LinkedIn, Facebook, Indeed.
They're up there. On our website, too. There's actually a blog.
On SEMA's classifieds, I think we have one up there,
that's
too.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So, but we're going to put a little thing there. I think it's going to be like coneywheels.com/jobs. So make sure you stay tuned for that. If it's not up to today when you see this, then most likely we'll have it up by tomorrow.
Yeah.
But so here's the deal. We have a position opening for a marketing coordinator. Remember Jared? Kicked him to the curb. He gone.
Bye. No, I'm just playing. If you're watching this, Jared, we love you. Good, we're wishing you the best.
Right.
He gone.
He's gone. Position two is going to be, we have a position open for a salesperson, an off-road truck salesperson.
Yes.
In California. It's based in Fontana, California right now. So make sure that if that's something that you're interested about and you want to sell some wheelies, hit us up.
And you kind of get to have a lifestyle in it. It's not just selling wheels. It's, we're a lifestyle brand.
It could be selling wheels. In fact, that's exactly what it is.
It is selling wheels, but what I mean.
Jackhammer's back. So it is selling wheels, but one of the other things about our company is that everybody, regardless of what position they are, even a warehouse guy, we value everybody's feedback and opinion. So there's a lot of times that we'll take advice or take feedback, or there are a lot of car enthusiasts in our company, and they'll be like, "Oh, this is so dope," or "That's dope," or "I would love to do this," or "What if?" And so, when you're selling wheels, you're not just selling wheels. You're become the voice of, the feedback that we receive and what kind of product we will build in the future.
Before, because you're dropping heat right now.
Heat.
There was one more position.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Sorry.
No, listen, you take it.
Oh, and the last position is we need, what would it be, a warehouse personnel?
That's exactly what we need.
Warehouse personnel.
That's right.
If you know how to work, what is it?
Yeah. If you drive a forklift.
Forklift.
If you maybe drive a stand-up, maybe you want to, grab some boxes off the shelf, send them out to FedEx so that people like you can receive your wheels.
And you make some money.
Yeah, we pay you for that. We pay you for that. So if you have any of those talents or skill sets and you would like to come to work from us, hey.
And
you win.
You got to be in the Fontana area. So, Indio, San Bernardino, all that dope little area in California.
I'll be honest with you. Anywhere in California that you can drive from, that you feel you're willing to drive to Fontana from, I don't care. That's great. But the marketing position is located in New York.
Yes. That,
That is the one position that's in New York. So that would be here in New York. We're based on Long Island. I hope I didn't say it with too much of an accent.
And I'm going to emphasize this. It's an in-house position. So if you're living in Canada, please Idaho. Don't message me, please.
Or Idaho.
Or Idaho. Please don't message
now,
me.
Now, Luis, what now, if they live in New Mexico?
Please don't message me. You
all
know,
right. No. Hypothetically, though,
okay.
If they were in Maryland.
Please don't message me.
See, there's a theme that's going on here, folks. An in-house position means in-house. It does not mean remote. Yes. I understand that there's plenty of people that will try to convince us that a remote position is possible. Here's the thing. I understand very well how remote positions work. And I'd even say that I would agree with you that it is possible. And if you were applying to a lot of random marketing positions, I believe, again, that it's possible. Here's why it's not possible for this position. You've seen these podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen us make content.
Mm-hmm.
We need contributing people that are not just here for a Zoom meeting. We also need people that are able to, you know, be part of the culture that we develop here. And that can only happen in-house. And we, you know, we constantly, people constantly want to argue with us about this position being able to be remote. I don't disagree with the fact that remote positions can work. That's not what we're talking about. But we don't hire anybody that's just going to sit here and do social ads all day and be judged by metrics. Like that's
right.
If we were a retail company, that might be a position that would hold its own, but we're not. We're a company that develops branding, and we work on a lot of different sponsorship programs, and that has to work in-house. You have to be here. So that's
agreed.
The deal.
Agreed. And that's one of the cool things about working in this company is the fact that we are like a family.
Yeah.
You know, we're constantly throwing, it could be from the warehouse person to a salesperson to a marketing person to even the president of the company literally contributes to this business. And, you know, we want you to be in-house. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for someone to work with us, give us ideas. You're not just going to be doing, you know, specific marketing things. You're going to be coming with us to events. You're going to be giving us, you know, maybe sometimes you'll pick up a sales call. You know, you're just going to be contributing, and that's what we want.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, and just to elaborate on what Luis just said about the whole sales call thing, you know, here's the thing. We're not – everybody does their positions, but the one thing that Luis is alluding to is the fact that, look, we're – because we are like a family, there's plenty of times where we step in to help out anybody that needs help, you know? If somebody's position's getting a little overwhelming or if there's some backup, like every person in this building will be like, yo, what can we do to help you?
Yep.
So if the phones are ringing off the hook because people like you are calling about wheels or have questions, we don't just let it ring. We pick it up.
Yeah.
And that's what Luis means. It's not because we're going to say answer the phones all day.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, and I didn't emphasize it. But
no, it's fine.
And that's one of the things. And now, as far as the marketing coordinator position, I kind of want to talk about it and get a little bit in depth with it because we are looking for someone that does have marketing experience. Meaning, you know, if we're going to go into it, you know, we're looking for someone that has experience with social ads. Am I talking like that?
What do I do with my hands?
That's what I'm like.
I'm trying to match your... You know, all right,
It's all right. That has experience with social ads, meaning if you've done Facebook campaigns, maybe if you've done Google ads and stuff like that, we need someone that knows how to do that. But also, we need someone that loves cars, that knows about cars, that's worked on cars. Yeah. You know, now, are we looking for someone that has the max experience in it? No. The good thing is we have guys that are experienced like Scott, like myself, that can help develop someone that that can execute the job properly, you know. So we're not going to sit here and say we're looking for, Mark Zuckerberg, you know what I mean? But we're looking for someone that can execute the job, you know, and also someone that is a team player. That's the main thing for us, being a team player, being here, willing to work with us and get the job done. That's all, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree completely. I mean, for the marketing position especially, I understand, like, Luis is stressing the right points. Being a car enthusiast is so important because you're going to be dealing with other car enthusiasts all day long. If you can't understand their passion and where they're coming from, this job can be much tougher to do.
Yes, sir.
But if you can do that stuff, we can give you the other skill set as long as you have some sort of marketing background. Preferably, if you have the, you know, have experience and exposure with, obviously, you know, whether it be Facebook ads or Google ads, if you have a creative sense about you, because there's a lot of overlapping responsibilities that have to do with creative and planning and trying to figure out how do we do these certain things, or how do we make these cool videos, or how do we make something funny, or how do we, you know, cater to this car person, or, you know, or what sponsorships we should offer, who should we sponsor? These are all things that come. If you know the industry, if you know cars, if you live and breathe this stuff, that comes much more naturally than it does for somebody who's not a car guy.
100% agreed. You know,
if car person.
Car person.
Remember, we're not looking for a guy. We're looking for a human.
The right person.
The right human.
Human.
Yeah. I just don't want to get stuck up with plural things. Understand, we'll take they's, he's, she's, he's, X's. I don't know what you... We don't discriminate. You're a car person, you're here.
On that note, I'm out.
It's like right here. I'm going to head out.
No, of course.
No, but I'm just saying, like...
Yes, of course. People, absolutely.
You know, we have no political opinions on this subject. We don't care... If you are a human that breathes, and so if you're an alien, we're a little discriminative. Not, I'm talking about like extraterrestrial.
Oh, yeah. But yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes. If you're driving spaceships.
If you're not a human.
Yeah.
Can't apply. I'm sorry. Right. But, you know, listen, that's just me throwing that out there.
Yes. But basically what we emphasize it all the time here. We're looking for a team player.
Yeah.
If you're a team player and you feel like this is something that you can do, message us, man. We're all ears here. We're trying to just have someone to work with us that we can find and eventually, hopefully, your family member with us. And yeah, I mean, we do cool things here. I mean, look at us. We're working. This is our job. This is fun. Maybe you could sit here with me. Why not? Or...
Listen, I would prefer that.
Yeah.
I prefer if you were here, sit with him, and I can be doing some other stuff. Right. But anyhow, listen. So that's the marketing position in a nutshell.
Yep.
Warehouse position we kind of went through.
Yep.
Off-road truck salesperson. Let's touch on that real quick, and then we'll jump off. So truck person. Look, we're looking for somebody that's into the off-road. Even on road, but like more off-road scene in community that you know what's going on. We have an off-road line that we've had for a number of years, Mamba Off-Road Wheels. It's mambawheels.com if you want to go check it out. So there's a couple things about the line. The first thing is we are actively working on new designs to revamp some of the designs we have on there. We want to go a little bit in a slightly different direction. So we're working on that stuff. It's exciting. It's fun product. And I think that for an off-road enthusiast, it truly will be an incredible opportunity. One, because the salesperson that we're looking for will have a major voice in being able to communicate back some of the trends, some of the things they see, some of the wheels, some of the fitments that they feel would be the best. So we can emphasize those. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you know, you're going to be coming into a place where there's plenty of growth potential, but also you're going to be able to make a home here for a long time.
Yeah.
So, look, do you need to know about wheels to do this job? It would help. But you don't need to, because you'll pick that up, I think, fairly quickly. But you need to be an off-road enthusiast at the very least. You need to be willing. You need to be hungry. You need to want to do this stuff. You need to want to take some pride and ownership in kind of the movement of this brand. So if that feels like you, and you're located in California, because we're looking for somebody in Fontana, California to...
What about Montana?
No. No, not at this time.
What about Michigan?
No, not Michigan either. See, there's a theme here. It's called Fontana, California.
Yes.
So, look, if you're in California and you Google right now from wherever you are, find out where Fontana is, look at the distance, decide whether you want to drive that every day. And if the answer is yes, and you feel like you have some of these other qualifications, go ahead. Send it in.
And for the 200 people that are going to watch this, jobs are available. We're working.
That's
we want you to work with us.
Right.
You want to meet Scott one day?
If that's your aspiration, I promise you, that's not
good. I know it's for some of y'all out there.
Yeah.
Scott, you know what I mean? He got an autograph the last time we were at SEMA, remember?
One. It wasn't an autograph. It was a picture.
There you go.
So, you know, I feel pretty accomplished now.
Yeah.
So those are them. You know, listen, we hear the questions come up quite a bit of how people break through into the automotive industry, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this because I think that, you know, maybe there's a lot of different perspectives and points of view that will kind of correspond to different experiences of people like that. But but you and I clearly have two polar opposite breakthroughs, right?
So, well, to vaguely break it down, you know what I mean? I got hired here. Because I did graphic design. That's really my base of what I do here is
plus
basically the visual.
Plus, we need a way to make coffee.
And that too.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of the visual and graphic design and all that. But I'm not a quintessential car guy. I became a quintessential. Like, I started to like cars while I was working here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, luckily, I had someone like Scott, which at the time, he was the marketing director here. And he guided me to get to this position where I am now, where I feel like I know a little bit more of what happens. So that's what, but the thing is I came in willing. That's the thing about why I think Scott hired me is I came in willing to learn more. And if that's you, you know, obviously we're going to want you to work here as well, you know?
Yeah.
So doesn't mean that necessarily, like now when I say my background, I'm a B-boy. So I kind of got the lifestyle of what is going on in the car scene because, a lot of people, if you're watching and you know, some of the, they do overlap sometimes.
Yeah.
So I know guys that, you know, homies of mine that had garages and or went to events and stuff like that, where like Tuner Evolution and things like that, that are open to dancers being at the event, you know, so it coincided. So I kind of understood the branding aspect of the car community, you know, but that's my background. How about you, Scott? How did you get into this automotive
industry? It's actually a funny story. I feel like we should leave that story for a whole separate time.
We should.
But,
so keep it small. Now, Scott, to me, Scott embodies a New York car enthusiast.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, because a lot of the people that I grew up remind me of him, you know, where, you know, it was back then, the street car scene was bigger, you know what I mean? I think it's still around, you know, but it's not as big as it used to be. And a lot of these guys just used to go to the garage and work on their cars. And you did that. You were in that party. I remember that when I was in high school, that was a big thing. Meetups, getting together, showing what you got, doing quick little drag races, you know? So
he just summed up the Fast and the Furious in case you didn't
I know.
See it.
But that was real back
all right,
then.
So,
you know?
Well, look, my background has always been cars. Since the moment I even had the opportunity to become a car person, whoa, there we are. from the moment I had the opportunity to become a car person, it was something that kind of always resonated with me. So, it's not like I come from this crazy car background. My dad maybe had a Corvette, here and there. So like he liked cars, but as far as working on the cars, that wasn't something that he did, you know, inherently. So I didn't pick up those skills from family, but you know, when I was younger, I was really around plenty of people that were car people, right? At the time, you know, my mom was a single mom, and you know, and my parents were divorced, so we had a babysitter, and that babysitter became more like family, and her husband was a mechanic, and my favorite thing to do when I was over their house was really just to go out there and watch him work on things. He had cars all over the place. So besides playing in the cars, you know, I'd be, you know, hovering over the hood, just kind of, you know, hanging out. But so I think that there was a lot of this, you know, car stuff. And I also think that I'm a pretty methodical person. So I like to take things apart to figure out how they work, put them back together, which is really what happened to me on my first engine build. If you want to hear me talk about how that panned out, go ahead and comment below. But basically, yeah, I was a car person. I got into drag racing when I was obviously much younger. Not like some real hardcore stuff, but, you know, go to the track and, you know, I like to run the cars and I like building cars a lot and making things. And, you know, back then, it was just really at the infancy of car parts being available for all cars. But, you know, in the beginning, if you didn't have a Civic, an Eclipse, a Focus, there was a couple of them. There really wasn't any parts for your cars, you know. Mm-hmm. So what you were doing is you were either making those parts or you were, you know, kind of hacking parts to fit. So, you know, that was my life, you know, like making, you know, and I got to a point where, you know, I was making a crazy amount of power in, you know, for me in that time period, in some of my cars, and I started working on cars for other people. And that was cool. I went to college for automotive marketing. Well, I went to college for marketing. And when I came back from college, you know, I thought I was going to open a shop. I started working on stuff. And look, it burnt me out a little bit. So I decided to go for another automotive job. I wanted to be in the automotive scene.
Yeah.
So how I did that was I thought about anything that would allow me to have a job. And I ended up getting a job working for Geico. Now, that didn't last too long, but after about 10 months, I mean, 11
close
months.
To, that's kind of close to a car job, right?
That's how I felt too, right?
Yeah.
That's how I felt too. So I essentially had sent an email in to... Now, I did internships and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I sent an email into the website. Sure. I'm not going to tell the whole story.
Okay,
death,
okay.
But
I would love to save this for a podcast, actually.
Okay.
But, you know.
So essentially, I sent an email in. I heard back. I ended up working for Koenig. And, you know, I've been here for almost 16 years. So I was the car person, right? I came in as the car person. But, like, Luis isn't. Luis is a person that found a love for cars through being surrounded by it, but he had the lifestyle. And I think that you can have one or the other. And like I said, he wasn't coming on as a main marketing person. I mean, he's a marketing person now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that when you try to get into the industry, when you try to break through into automotive, there's some things that you need to know. First thing is you should have a skill set that they're looking for, because just being a car enthusiast and not having any skills isn't really enough. But if you have a basic skill set for the position they want, most of the time, you're going to get the spot over somebody that's not a car person but has a larger skill set, because they know that some of the skills can be trained and learned, whereas being a car enthusiast can't be, mm-hmm. right? So you definitely have an edge up on there. And I also think that if you're looking to break into the automotive thing, there's a couple good programs. SEMA does have a program that, you know, allows you to kind of, especially if you're in college or school, allows you to come to SEMA and kind of see, work with some of these companies that are around and just see what's going on. I think emailing any company that you really like that may be within your, you know, your local area, mm-hmm. and saying, do you have any internships? I'll work for free. I just want to be part of the company and get what's going on. You may not get hired there for the full time, but you know, you may pick up some skill sets and something to put on the resume.
And another thing, and I'm, you know, that for me, you know, obviously for me to gain knowledge about automotive, obviously I had Scott, but the other way that I would do it is I would go to YouTube. I would go to YouTube and literally just, you know, like, for example, if something went wrong with my car, you see me do it. I tried a few times trying to fix my car on my own, to just watching some tutorials about certain things that you don't understand. And, you know, eventually you just kind of get a groove of what's going on.
But most likely, if you want to be in the automotive industry, you're already a car person.
Oh, and a selfless plug here. Is that the right word? Anyways, check out our YouTube. We have a lot of like stuff like that.
Yeah.
Message.
Okay.
We do.
We have a lot of information on our YouTube channel. It's Koenig Wheels USA. And if you're not watching us right now, most likely you're listening to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify.
Yeah. And we have an endless amount of information that Scott and the team here has provided, that if you ever wanted to break into the automotive industry, it's a good doorway.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you. Sorry, I was up late last night. I was arguing with people on Instagram who are going in on Chris from BS Rebuild.
Oh.
So if you're watching this and that's something that's interesting for you, go over there and look at my comments that I've been making to people. I think I'm making my point because nobody's really commenting back.
Wait, so what's going on?
Not something we need to talk about here. I mean, we could have, but basically, Chris from BS Rebuild, if you haven't seen this project for BS Rebuild, he basically took an R35 and he put it on an R34 GTT body onto an R35 platform. So, so and so a couple things about this. Did we finish our automotive talk? We've done it, right?
I think so.
Before I move on and we end this podcast, I just feel like
Basically, what we're saying is, as far as this coming to work with us, if you're a cool guy, well, cool girl, cool guy,
human,
cool human,
human,
hit us up.
Yeah,
jobs are available. We have 3 positions available, so come through.
Right, right. And just to quickly summarize the getting into automotive thing, just so we're clear, if you want to get into automotive, there are certainly ways to do it. And I think that, you know, just showing your eagerness and your ability and your capabilities, I think, is one way. I think that you can also really, you know, reach out to these companies, start a relationship with them, you know, like this is not something that you can't do, but I would say prerequisite of being a car person is certainly right up there. So, you know, networking, finding people, you have LinkedIn now, you could always message a company that you really want to work for and say, hey, is there any positions over the different things? They have websites.
Yep.
So there's a lot of things. Check out Seamus Classified section. There's jobs there that are strictly automotive. So you have some options. And I also think that, you know, for me, first off, let's put it this way. Automotive is never going to be the highest paid jobs that you're going to find. So if you're looking for money, like, maybe not automotive. But I will say that you will have, if you're a car person, like for me, being part of this industry always had so much fulfillment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I always felt so, like, when you're working in a spreadsheet, let's say you're working in a spreadsheet for a marketing spot, to know that this has to do with actual car parts somehow makes the spreadsheet a little less boring.
Yeah. Well, and
not all the time.
And I mentioned this when we were talking to Kelsey. It's just one of these things that I kind of get to see is the growth of a lot of things. So, like, growth of the drifting community, the growth of, motorsports and stuff, where, you know, social media age is kind of changing it, you know, making it go different directions, getting bigger. Certain things are just skyrocketing as far. And also, one thing that I appreciate is in the industry, you scratch my back, I scratch yours. It's this weird thing that I've noticed that everyone wants to support each other.
Yeah.
That's what one of the things that Scott emphasizes most. It's not, there's no competition. I've noticed, I've talked to other wheel brands and stuff, and we're always willing to work with each other.
Yeah.
And that you can't get in other industries. And I think, you know, that's why I like working here in the automotive industry.
Yeah. I mean, and just to be totally clear, I feel like transparency is a big thing here. I don't do a lot of scratching. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, but helping people, you know, we have a lot of camaraderie in this industry, and I don't think people really understand that. When you go there and you start talking about other brands, yeah, there's a few brands that I think I've run into over the years that clearly don't share that same passion. I'll also say that those brands also don't really care about anything from you except for taking your money. But
I didn't say anything.
No, but I'm just saying, but I'm not saying who those brands are, but I'm saying, but for the most part, there's a lot of camaraderie between brands because they all know that this is not a dig on anybody. This is about servicing the same piece, and a lot of them share that car camaraderie. So that's the good news. Now, let's get back to this, Chris.
Okay, so he's doing a crazy build like he always does.
Yeah, he does. Right.
Okay.
So let's talk about this real quick. First off, I think everybody needs to be 100% clear. Hmm. Chris from B is for Build. His channel, his builds, they're not meant to be like the Tommy FES spec stuff that happens out there, right? Like, if you're not familiar with Tommy FES channel, whether he likes us or not, I don't care. Still watch it. It's truth.
Yeah.
I watch his content. You know why? Because I'm into the same type. I share the same type of stuff that he does as far as how he would restore a car, how I build cars. Sure. Like, I'm very OEM plus. I want things to look right. I do like a little bit of coolness to them. I want them restored in a certain sense. I don't skip corners. I believe you use quality parts. So there's a whole bunch of things there. I like his channel, and I don't care what he says about us. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, completely different build than what Chris from B's Build is trying to do. He's not trying to make an OE car. He's not trying to restore a car. Chris's whole thoughts and on all these builds has always been to build these things to be these massive
mega,
like, what would you do kind of things. You know, things you're like, wow, what if an R34 had an R30, you know, had a one of the VR38, you know, engines in it or something like that. So that's what Chris from BS Builds channel is. And what I like about that stuff, what I love about a lot of the channels that we support, it has to do with the fact that we're doing it in a way where there's some educational value that comes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Chris from BS Build is not there to teach you how to make an OE car. He's not teaching you how to make a one of those Grand Concourse restorations. He's there showing you some fab skills, some general fab skills, and some really complicated things that he uses along the way to make some of these creations, you know, from what he has. So I just think, don't you think that there's a reason that a channel as big as his doesn't have lifts? Don't you think a channel as big as his that works out of the garage that, you know, like, a, I mean, it's not a big garage. It's a, like, there's a reason for it. He's not trying to be an automotive center making these custom whatever. He's doing these builds, right?
Yeah.
So that's number one. You can't compare one to the other. Number two, one of the things that happened, and, you know, I hope Chris doesn't care that I'm saying this. I don't think there's going to be that many people that will, you know, watch this anyway. Mm-hmm. That wasn't a dig at me. It was just, you know, a fact. So basically, all right, here's the thing. When it came down to the wheel fitment, we were stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Mm.
The R35 has a much wider wheelbase. I think it's something like, it might be 4 inches wider than the R34, or maybe it's 2 inches, but it's either an inch more on each side or it's 2 inches more on each side. I think it's 4 inches, so I think it's 2 inches on each side. So when you take an R34 that may be able to have, let's say, an 18 by 10 and a half wheel at like a 25, hypothetically, and then you add 2 inches to the vehicle, right? To the width, the wheelbase of the vehicle on each side. So essentially what happens is you're taking away 50 millimeters.
Yep.
Okay? So you're taking away about 50 millimeters. So right there and then, because of the fact that he's used a wider wheelbase car on a narrower body car, you have less room. Like right off the bat. So we figured out that if he didn't want to do any more, he already put a wide body kit to get like the R34 GTR body.
Yeah.
If he didn't want to go any wider than that, we were going to be around 18.9 and a half at a 35 offset, which is what's on the car.
Mm-hmm.
He might have a 19.9 and a half 35, but same width, fitment stuff. Top that off, he continued to run R35 brakes. Now, GTR R35 brakes are much larger than the R34 GTR brakes that came with it. R34 GTR brakes are very equivalent to like 350Z track brakes, okay? Those are the Brembos that generally come on the R34s. The R35 is a completely other level type brake.
Yeah.
They require a taller wheel. Most of these cars come from the factory with 20s. So you're now limited to a wheel that has to be narrower than the R35 came with. And the R34 could run, but you also have to have something that has enough caliper clearance to be able to work with those R35 brakes. In the early part of this build, Chris and I had spoken multiple times about how this was going to happen. And I had said to him, well, you know, maybe it'd be a better thing to downsize the brakes to R34 brakes just to open up some of the options, because you're going to be dealing with a narrower wheel. And he said to me, I don't want to do that, because the whole idea behind this build was essentially making an R34 that has a complete R35 running gear.
Yep.
That's what he did. I understood that. Chris understood that. I said to him before we got started, it's probably going to be tough to find a wheel that's going to meet all the criteria that you're going to need. He said, I understand. We'll figure it out when we get there.
Yeah.
When we got there, 9.5 or on a 35 is all he really could fit. The first round, he was going to try to go with something a little bit wider than that. And we had sent him a bunch of wheels to do some test fits, even though we did the math. And that's why, if you look at the car right at this moment, so look at the date or whatever this podcast is, and then, you know, see if you can find the video that correlates if you're watching in the future. That's why the tires look short on the car right now. because he was going to plan to short the tire a little bit to be able to try to get a little bit more wiggle room to put a wider wheel in the car. That didn't work out. So the idea to make the car look better is to get a more aggressive tire. And Nitto has already sent those tires, but they weren't there in time for the videos that he put out. So what you're seeing are pictures of a car that looks fairly completed at this stage, and the wheel fitment looks weenie. Now, but here's the thing. There's a reason it does.
Yeah.
It's not... That wheel that's on the car is not my first choice. It wasn't Chris's first choice. We talked about it immensely. I sent him a bunch of wheels. That seemed to be what was there. We have something that we're thinking about for the future. I'll leave it at that. I'm not getting into it.
Yeah.
But you know, look, there's a lot of people that are over there on Instagram, and I've been watching on the video comments, and you know, we've been staying out of it because I know what it is. That just are hating on the car. And that fitment and the wheels. And here's the thing. There is no doubt that wheels make the most dramatic statement on the exterior of a car. We know that.
Sure. Yep.
And everybody's going to have their own preference. Now, I don't think the wheels, from being a car person, I don't know that I feel the wheels look totally terrible. I actually think they look okay. The tire size is what's making the car look anemic. And Chris knows that, and he's already had tires, and Nitto's sending the tires. So I think that will get better inherently just by changing to the right size tire.
Well, it seems like it's one of those situations where the internet is the internet. So
yeah, but
you can't,
but also,
you can't stop the trolls. You know?
No, for sure. But there's times trolls are trolls and have no merit.
Yeah.
And there's other times where you kind of look at them and you're like, yeah, well, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And I look at that wheel, and do I think that that's the perfect wheel choice for the car? No. And here's why. The R34, you're used to seeing something that's wide, concave, has a bigger lip on it, has more movement to it than the wheel that you happen to see on the R34 now.
Yeah.
I think I said R34 the first time, but R34 to R34. You're not going to be able to see this on that R34 because that R34 really isn't an R34. It's an R35. That's the difference. The difference is it just doesn't have the room there to run what an R35 needs or what an R34 usually comes with.
Mm.
It's just the nature of building cars that are so custom and so different. And like I said, if you are the ones that are out there comparing this car to Tommy Effia's restorations and the crazy stuff he does to get these cars back to, you know, OE pristine with a little bit of JDM flair, you clearly don't understand the difference.
Totally different.
Totally different.
Totally different.
Totally yeah. different.
But that's what they do.
And know? I would expect nothing less from Tommy to rip on that build because it's not the type of build he would appreciate. Of course. It's not the type of build that is in his wheelhouse. And I understand that.
If you look at Beers for Bill's channel and go through the past, you can obviously tell what type of builds he does. He does things for the imagination, you know, and a lot of what I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Like kind of like what, you know, imagine if this build with this build, how would it look together, you know?
Right. Or how would it be if, I mean, listen, OE restoration. The guy took a burnt up Lamborghini and then he made an off-road vehicle that whatever. So, you know, and then I listened to people in that one complain about how it, you know, he didn't do enough engineering. And I know he worked with an engineer full time to try to get that whole situation under wraps. What's so like the dude is incredible, like does incredible things with what you see, and in judging him from an OE restoration standpoint, it would be like going into Monster Garage back in the day with Jesse James and judging their car on an OE type build. It's just not what they were doing. The Monster Garage, they were building these fictitious imaginative builds.
Yeah. There you go.
So that's all I have to say about that.
Well, as far as Gun, by the way. And yeah. I appreciated that just because you were looking at it outside of the brand. And that's the cool thing about doing this podcast is we could talk like this. Basically, Scott is telling you he understands, you know, because it's their Koenig wheels.
But don't grill him so
exactly.
hard.
Exactly. Come, you know.
Because you're judging him on the wrong standards.
100%.
100%. And you know, so where I was chiming in yesterday on some of the comments had to do with the more technical wheel fitment pieces.
Yep.
Not the aesthetics. You know, people saying things like, Well, if you put a spacer on there, if you put a spacer, the wheel would stick outside the car. I sent him B-profile wheels that were super concave, and I said, hey, look, here's what you could try to do to make them work on the car. And he said, yeah, but I'd be really compromising the way the car drives. It's already, I said, yeah, I get what you mean. And he's like, oh, it's going to stick outside. I don't want to do that. Adding a spacer makes it worse. People said about using three-piece wheels. My argument's not really against that. I mean, that's probably a place where a three-piece wheel actually has its point. Three-piece wheel gives you the option to take a different pad and pair it with a different size lip and a different size barrel. So you could do a lot of customization with a three-piece wheel. Here's where it probably wouldn't have worked out. A lot of the three-piece stuff, not all of them, but a lot of the three-piece stuff will have a flange where the pieces need to bolt together. That's the bolts that you see right around the area of the spokes. That area usually creates some sort of narrowing of the diameter on that wheel. So the problem he probably will have even on a three-piece wheel is that you're going to, because those massive R35 brakes are still there, you're going to lose the caliper clearance I think you would need to go by, and then you'd have to probably go up to a 20 to, you know, in a three-piece wheel to really make it work out perfectly. And I don't think that you're going to see much crazy movement in the front part of the lip. Just mathematically, I don't think it's going to work out. Now, you know, but it would be an option if the magical combination exists. So, look, I just think that, you know, judge people based off of what they're doing, what their intentions are, not you know, just pairing people to pair people. I just think if you're a car person, you understand these types of builds. I think you'll understand that everybody has a different angle. I mean, there's a lot of cars out there that I've seen that people put crazy amount of work into, and I think that they're god awful disgusting.
Oh, sure, I've seen them.
Yeah,
I get sent some of them. Sorry, guys.
And so, but that doesn't mean I'm right.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, right? And so, don't impose your opinion as fact.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Like, appreciate car people, because there's a lot of people right now, especially the EPA and things, whatever, that are trying to take your cars away from you. And I, you know, appreciate the fact that there's a lot of different car people out there that can kind of come together under one umbrella. You know, listen, enjoy what's out there, because this content, these thoughts, this ability to imagine what an R35 can be like, if it had an R34 body, I mean, man, go back 10 years. That didn't exist. That stuff was just a fantasy, right? Now it's something you can Google on YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, Google on YouTube.
All I gotta say is EVs are coming.
I mean, okay. So that's pretty much it. Listen, make sure you stay tuned for this Friday. Every Friday we put out a piece of content on our YouTube channel, Koenig Wheels USA. It's usually pretty funny. We're trying to do a better job with them. I think that we get better and better. We also put a lot of real knowledge there and science.
Yeah. Science.
Yeah. So that comes out there. Don't forget, we do the podcast 3 p.m. every Wednesday. That's Eastern time, in case you didn't know. And right before this, at 2 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday, we go live on Instagram and Facebook. So if you want to come over there and argue with us about wheel fitment for Chris's BS for Build R34-35 creation, then hop over there. We'll be happy to debate it with you. Just don't bring the trollness. Don't bring the anger. Don't bring the meanness. Just bring some facts and we'll talk about it. Oh, shit.
And
face, right?
And last but not least, if you want to work with us,
yeah,
the information will be in the bio.
Yep.
If you didn't listen to the whole podcast, you know, we understand, you know, but the information will be in the bio. Also, email marketing@koenigwheels.com. Send over your resume and we'll check you out.
Resume. We out. Peace. Take care.